The world of construction is transforming before our eyes. How we design, plan, quantify, and build is changing day to day. But it's never been so easy to connect, share, and bring people together. Our industry is reshaping. So how do we develop relationships? How do we overcome our fears? How do we generate business? And how do we ultimately become the best version of ourselves?
This is Measured. I'm McDonaghy, and my guest today is...
Welcome back to another episode of Measured with McDonaghy. So it's been probably around 3 months since I've done a podcast, but it's good to be back, feeling a lot more refreshed, rejuvenated, and sort of ready to go, to bring some great interviews from a lot of different types of people from the construction sector to you over the next 2, 3, 4 months. But it's really good to be back. Took a bit of time off the podcast. We had done 56, 57 episodes in about 9 months. So it was pretty hectic. But it also got to the point where it was probably around March, April time this year where things really, really kicked off for the business. So for those of you that don't know, I started the business in July 2019. About 8 months later, we had COVID that came through and absolutely knocked us all off our feet. So we had to do a massive sort of pivot. Can't believe I've actually said that word, but we had to readjust, realign, specialize a lot more, bring more value to the people that we work with, the community that we're building, and essentially just become better at what we do. So even though I've been recruiting for, I think, 8 or 9 years at the time, it really sharpened me up in many different ways, which I'm grateful for. But March, April this year, things just went absolutely bananas. At the start of the year, it was fairly quiet, sort of around January, February, which I know it usually is, just with how the Australia and New Zealand markets just, you know, it's always holiday time in January, isn't it? So yeah, but it went crazy. We really started to see the effects of COVID in around March, April time. It was across the board. At one point, you know, it was call after call after call after call, which is great, it provided some new challenges for us. But it's been awesome. We've been lucky to have, you know, back to back record months. We're proud that we're getting our name out there and becoming known to a lot of the tier two, tier three, even some of the tier one contractors, a lot of the PQS and project management consultancies. And it's really starting to take off. We've taken on 2 more full-time employees, and we're ready to rock and roll. So I kind of just wanted to do a bit of an introduction, I guess, episode today to tell you what's been going on, to give you an idea of what to expect with the podcast this season and in the future, to really just get it all out there and get back into the swing of things. So I feel a bit rusty doing this today, but hopefully you can all bear with me. But I guess what's been going on in the market over the last 3 months. So everything's changed exponentially. That's all I can say. The talent war is 100% here. I'll have some statistics to read out for you a little bit later, but we're obviously in a really interesting period at the moment. So there's lockdowns currently in Victoria, in ACT, in New South Wales. There's also lockdowns in New Zealand. It kind of feels like, yes, we're getting close to the likes of vaccination rates being where they need to be. That's likely to be towards the end of the year, but it also kind of feels like we're back to the start again. So it's a really interesting dynamic at the moment. And it's really interesting when it comes to finding good people. So the construction industry right now, I would say the vast majority of contractors, consultancies, project management consultancies, quantity surveying consultancies, right through to tier one civil infrastructure building, everyone right now is looking for someone. And even if they haven't got a gap right there, they're still interested in looking for people. So that's, you know, it's a really challenging market to recruit within. So we've got international border lockdowns. We've got the bubble between New Zealand and Australia has closed. We've got state lockdowns and border restrictions as well. So when it comes to where do we find people right now, it's not impossible, but it's very, very difficult. So they're currently deeming this current time that we're living through globally as the Great Resignation. So 55% of all Americans are planning to look for a job in the coming year. And I guess obviously that's America, but you know, Australia and, you know, the Commonwealth nations are never too far behind the US. So even though they're a lot further on in the vaccination rollout, and it seems, you know, from watching sporting events and, you know, just knowing some people in the US that things are nearly back to normal, even though the rates of actually people contracting COVID are going up, it seems like people are just pushing on and trying to move on. But if you look at 55% of people are planning to resign or look for a new job in the next year, that's absolutely insane. So if you think, say, I don't know, talk about a big tier one contractor like Lendlease or Lang O'Rourke or someone like that, even if we were to say 25 to 30% of their staff or anyone staff in the construction industry are looking to apply for a new job or resign, that means they're going to need their turnover of staff is going to be sort of around 25 to 30%. And that's being prudent as well. So where do we replace those candidates? Where do we find those candidates again? 25 to 30% of a business that maybe has 1,000 employees, you know, that's hundreds of employees. So if we take that on a micro scale, even if you're looking at a business of 10, if 55% of their staff were looking for something new, that could be pretty catastrophic to their business. So this is the impacts of COVID. And what I would say is that the companies that maybe mishandled COVID to an extent, and that might be those who let go of a lot of people, or those that didn't communicate with their people that well, or those that, you know, just turned their nose up at people who may have been struggling or going through some mental health issues or experiencing the I guess isolation for COVID or whatever it might be. Those companies that haven't handled that well, they're going to go through a pretty tough time. And even if, say, 20, 30% of their staff were to resign, it's their reputation on the market is going to be very difficult for them to be able to attract new people. So with that, it is a very, very challenging market, and that's what we've seen. And we have been lucky to an extent in being able to add value to our clients to say, you know, you probably need to look at increasing salaries across these types of roles because they are the most likely to be in demand and they're the hardest to find. You know, for us, it's all about consulting with our clients and candidates. It's not all about just give me a job and let me try and fill it. You know, that's not how we do things. But with that, it's a super challenging time. If you've got a bad reputation in the market, how do you attract new people in? And largely speaking, it could be more salary. It could be trying to change your culture and getting a good PR representative who'll go out there and do that piece on the TV with regards to what they're doing and what they're changing and what the great opportunities exist. But it's going to be a tough time. And until I would say probably, you know, we're nearly in September now, I don't think we're going to see really the benefits of the borders opening up again, maybe until this time next year. Even when international borders open, I think the immigration is going to be so far behind in processing visas. It's going to be absolutely chaotic. I have sponsored people before, and I'm currently sponsoring people now. And you know, I know people that they're on bridging visas for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Like, that's absolute insanity. And you know, these are for fairly straightforward working visas. You know, so I you know, until the Australian Immigration Authority gets its act together, I really can't see, you know, things really kicking off and being back to normal as in 2019, 2018 in terms of new talent coming in the industry for you know, minimum a year. You know, it could be a lot longer than that. But I guess, you know, with it being called the Great Resignation, there's also so many other things that are going on as well. So obviously Victoria is experiencing its sixth or seventh lockdown right now. So I have only really went through two lockdowns. So I really feel, you know, so sorry for the people in Victoria that are going through that. You know, it's not even been reported on the news, but you know, what I've seen on social media and people protesting, you know, I get it, you know, and it's, you know, you feel helpless to an extent. So obviously they're in another lockdown right now. And this is hope that vaccinations can start, you know, getting up there a lot more, and we really start kicking on over the next few months. But with that, with six or seven lockdowns in Victoria, with New South Wales in a 2 month lockdown at the moment, Brisbane and Queensland has been fairly unscathed. Even New Zealand's in another lockdown, and you know, their lockdowns are pretty extensive as well. So we're actually seeing the great interstate migration as well as the great resignation. So right now we're seeing so many people wanting to leave Victoria, and that's from right from the 70, 60, 70K salaries right through to the $250,000 to $300,000 salaries, you know, and that's across contractors and consultancies, and people are looking at it and going, right, I'm in my sixth or seventh lockdown. You know, it's fairly crap weather, let's face it. You know, you never know what to expect. If you're living in Victoria, some days it's absolutely beautiful. Next day it's it could be snowing, it could be raining, you know, it could be 5 degrees, it could be 0 degrees, it could be 40 degrees. You just never know what to expect. With that, you still have high prices for property. And if you look at Queensland and you look at Brisbane and you go, okay, well, there's the Brisbane Olympics that's coming up in 2032. There's some major projects that are currently underway and under construction right now, both civil infrastructure and building. And if you then look and say, right, what's coming, what's in the pipeline? You know, there's so much in the pipeline as well. You're talking, there's going to be $1 to $2 billion projects dropping every year for the next 3-4 years. And right now we're seeing so many people look at that and go, right, we can maybe live in the Gold Coast. We can maybe live in between Sunshine Coast and Brisbane. And the average house price is $598,000. So that's from the median house price for both units and houses. So for, between them both is $598,000. The median house price for a home is $675,000. I probably did a bit of research on it, but I'd assume you're talking 1.2, 1.3 million maybe for Sydney, and you're maybe talking close to a million, 1.1, 1.2 in Melbourne. So if you're looking at that and going, okay, well, we could maybe move to Brisbane, or we can move to Goldie or Sunshine Coast, and there's so much work going on, and we could pay $600,000, $700,000. We get a 3-4 bedroom house, dual living, swimming pool, and we get all of that, and we've got consistent work, and it's going to be between lowest 15 degrees, highest maybe 40 degrees. throughout the year. You know, it's becoming that dream location in Australia. One of the reasons I moved to Brisbane initially was because of the potential growth. What really is going on is absolutely unbelievable. So obviously we also got the news of the Brisbane Olympics in 2032. So obviously it was a one horse race, and it was a bit anticlimactical. I was actually down at the celebrations myself, and it was a bit of a weird vibe. But that's probably Brisbane to a T to some extent. But what we're seeing now is that even though it's 11 years away, and I'm speaking to some experts within this field, and they're budgeting this as somewhere between a $3 to $5 billion spend. You know, I don't know. I'm not an expert in terms of how to price projects and what the expectations are, but I cannot see any way that this is going to be a $3 to $5 billion project. Just with regards to, there's going to be changes in premiers, there's going to be changes in governments. There's going to be internal battles between councils. The fact that there's 11 years to the Olympics, and normally it's around a 7-8 year period, I believe, between actually being awarded until you actually have to host the Olympics. You know, that's a long time to mess it up. And generally when you begin to mess things up, that's when things cost a lot more. I'm just throwing a figure out there, but I'd be surprised if it's not something like 12 billion. You know, it's like, there's currently the Cross River Rail is like 3.5 billion. And that's the project that they're saying is going to benefit, you know, the Olympics no end. But the reality of it is, it's only like an extra 4 or 5 stations. You know, when you look at the accommodation needed, the stadium upgrades that are needed, the public IT and technology that is going to be needed for apps, you know, mobile data, everything that's going to be needed there. You look at the civil infrastructure, the planning that's going to go into it over the next 4 or 5 years. You know, there's going to be. I would assume that budget just gets absolutely blown out of the water. But with that, again, it creates opportunity for people. You know, the year 2000, with the Sydney Olympics, you know, they say that that's what really put Sydney on the world scale, globally, as like, you know, where would you want to live? Is it New York? Is it London? Is it Sydney? You know, I don't know if Brisbane will ever get there, because, you know, it's still not a coastal town, you know, a coastal city. It's still, you know, you are a bit inland and on the river. But I mean, in terms of a destination to live in Australia, it's got something special. You know, it's got affordability. It's got, if you live in Brisbane, you know, you can work anywhere. You know, you're an hour away from Sydney, you're 2.5 hours away from New Zealand, you're 2.5 hours away from Melbourne. You know, it's, you've got so much opportunity, and then you've got far north Queensland, you've got even Northern Territory. You know, there's just so much about Brisbane and where it's positioned, and you can see things really, really beginning to kick off. So the opportunity that exists there is phenomenal, and the great interstate migration between Victoria and Queensland and New South Wales, Queensland, is only just beginning. We've seen it looking like it's begun to really kick off over the last sort of 18 months, but with border closures and with the MIQ facilities and not enough spaces being available, you know, it is still very, very difficult to get into to Queensland. So what I think in the next few years is that we're going to start seeing a lot of people trickling through. And once COVID's, you know, a thing of the past, and hopefully it won't be long before that's reality, we are going to see some really cool things happening. So how that affects Brisbane is, you know, is, I believe between now and the 2032 games, you know, it's going to become the place to be in Australia, and not just for work, but just for lifestyle, and also investment. You know, if we look at between the Olympics when they were announced in September 1993 and September 2000, so between 93 to 2000, those 7 years, Sydney dwelling values jumped 60%. So if you look at, say, it's 675,000, the median price for a home in Brisbane now, in 10 years' time, you could look at potentially at But if you buy one now, in 10 years' time, you've got a 60% increase. You know, and at that time, that was double the national average. So, you know, a great place to be. But along with the great interstate migration, you know, what we're seeing from those living in New Zealand is also massive demand to move to Australia. So there obviously have been differences in how Australia's dealt with COVID and how New Zealand has dealt with COVID. New Zealand's been fairly, they've all been about elimination. They've had it pretty good in terms of the last 18 months. It's been fairly COVID-free. A few snap lockdowns here and there, but even over the last 2 weeks, the people that we've seen contacting us about relocating to Australia, you know, is jumped exponentially. You know, they're going through a lockdown, and there's what 82, 83 cases over the last couple of days, and you know, who knows where that's going to be. And so New Zealand has the lowest vaccine rollout in the developed world. Either that's a fact, or it's fairly close to being the worst. You know, like it's we're seeing those from their early 20s who wanted to go on that OE to London or New York. You know, they're going, well, what's the next best? You know, and next best is probably getting over and doing 12 months in Queensland, where you could maybe go and work in some of these big resorts. You know, you go on the Great Barrier Reef, you could go do a bit of work in Brisbane for 6 months, and then travel for 6 months. You know, those young people that want to experience something. And then we're also getting the, you know, 25s to, you know, even 55s are saying, right, I want to make investments. I'm sick of the house prices in New Zealand. I'm sick of some people are sick of government. Some people aren't. But you know, there's so many reasons why Australia could be looked upon favorably. You know, it looks like Australia will come out of lockdown a lot quicker than NZ. So the state government have agreed with the Morrison government that at 70% vaccination rates, lockdowns will become a lot less likely. Once 80% vaccination rates across each state, then lockdowns will only be targeted and arrival caps will be lifted. So right now, there's a third of Australians are vaccinated. So that's with two jabs. And then 57% have one jab. So, you know, we're not massively far away from that. And people love ScoMo, so some people don't. You know, generally, it's hard to be a politician, that's for sure. But the good thing I'm seeing at the minute is that he's being fairly, you know, ballsy in terms of, right, we're pushing this, right, we're going to open up again. We can't stay in this forever. And as a business owner, I appreciate that. You know, ultimately what we've actually noticed in the talent perspective is that with the first few months, so say February, March, April, May, June, you know, we had that initial interest of people wanting to leave, you know, but now we've got these lockdowns again. Now it's becoming harder and harder to find talent. And if we can't find talent, we can't place talent into businesses. So we want to see an end to this. We want to see things opening up again and getting back to normal. And if it's not back to normal, then an element of, right, we are going to open up, and we're going to be specific on, we're going to allow key, you know, qualified workers to come in from, you know, Asia, UK, South Africa, you know, places of where you see the construction industry in Australia has always been built on immigration. You know, and I guess, you know, it's a penal colony, so I mean, it is what it is. So we need things to open up, and I'm, you know, fairly appreciative of the Scott Morrison government, you know, giving us a roadmap to say, right, by the end of this year, or at least once we're 80% vaccinated, then we're opening up, you know. And that's a sigh of relief. And all the expats out there like myself, those who have connections overseas, you know, it'll be a big burden off their back, and it'll be a massive relief to see our friends and family from overseas. And I guess there is always going to be people who'll will object, and you know, but my feeling is just get vaccinated and move on, you know. So again, the you know, it's a good thing to see that we're chugging along there. But right now, you know, it's an interesting market. It's probably one of the most interesting markets that I have ever worked in. We still in the next few months, so we're nearly September, or this is being recorded on the 30th of August. So by the time it gets released, it will be September. So it's September. We've got September, October, November. You know, there's 3 months there, I would say, of borders are going to be continue to be locked down. So really, in the next 3 months, it's going to be excruciatingly hard to find talent. So if I was an employer, a business owner, I'd be thinking, right, what can I do to look at basically bringing in good talent? Right. So one thing I'm saying to business owners is, if you want, say, a design manager, you know, every single company out there is looking for a design manager. How about look at bringing in, you know, design coordinator or senior design coordinator, someone with the you know, the skills, maybe not all of the skills, but maybe 50% of the skills, but someone who has 100% of the attitude, you know, because it all comes down to attitude. Are you willing to learn? Are you willing to take on responsibility? Are you willing to engage with your team? You know, all of those things really, really matter. So you've got to be flexible. You've also got to be flexible in terms of moving quick. If you're a company that does 3-4 interviews, you know, you can kiss goodbye to any candidates being interested. If you're a company that isn't too sure what they want, or if you waste a candidate's time, a candidate goes and tells 2-3 other people, and all of a sudden, you know, when you've interviewed 10 candidates and wasted all their time, then 30-40 people know about that. 30-40 people in a fairly small market, you know, things get around. So don't waste people's time. You know what you want before you're interviewing people. Be specific. You know, if you want to make an offer, I would say, of course, do your due diligence, but make that offer fairly quick. You know, make the person feel loved. You know, these are the things that you've got to do. You've got to really go out there and court that person. So you've got to be flexible. You've got to be specific, and you've really got to go out there and make that person feel like they're the most special person in the world. So these are the things that you've got to do right now to find talent. And largely speaking, I can't see it being any different for the next 12 months. So that's a little bit of a debrief of what's been happening over the last 3 months. With the podcast for the rest of the year, or rest of the season, really what I'm interested in doing is moving this podcast on from being, you know, a podcast fairly focused on quantity surveying and estimating, to being one that's a real voice for the construction sector. So, you know, part of the difficulty is that quantity surveyors and estimators and even those at senior level earning $300,000-$400,000 a year, you know, just by the way, just with the role that it is, those people in that demographic are fairly introverted and don't really want to come on the podcasts. And, you know, I am generalizing to an extent, but I'm out there actively engaging with people to see if we can start sharing their stories. But a lot of the time, they don't want to. And that's fair. I get that. So this is the reason that we want to open this up to being a real source for construction throughout Australia. So Australia and New Zealand, that's not our thing as well. I want this to be about, you know, the South Pacific and to an extent, you know, about what's going on in Australia, what's going on in New Zealand. You know, there's the same companies work across both countries in many cases. And Brisbane, as I said earlier, and Auckland's like a 2.5-hour flight, and that's the same from Brisbane to Melbourne. So, I mean, we want to make this a real voice of the construction sector across Australia and New Zealand, and I want to have real conversations as well. So, you know, I have done a lot in the past with regards to trying to bring more diversity into construction. A lot of the time I've been, you know, sitting on the fence as well, figuring out, like, what can I say and what can't I say? You know, I'm a white male immigrant in Australia. Do I have any real, am I supposed to be saying these things? Am I allowed to say these things? You know, as I said, like, I wasn't born here. You know, am I entitled to say these things? So, you know, there's part of me that worries about that, but right now, and just with the construction sector and the challenges that we're facing, you know, there's there's a talent war, and pretty much 50% of the world's population doesn't work in construction, and that's, I'm talking about the females, and why not? You know, what are we doing to try and bring more women into construction? That's a key point of conversation I want to have. I want to talk about what we're doing to engage more Indigenous people into construction, and that's one thing as well that, you know, I haven't been overly comfortable talking about, because I don't know all the history, and I don't know if I'm going to say something that slip up or say something wrong. But ultimately, the guests that I talk to, I want them to push it on me and educate me. So ultimately, I'm going to ask questions. I'm probably going to slip up, and I'm going to maybe make a fool of myself in some extent. But ultimately, these are the conversations that we need to be having. People need to feel fairly comfortable making a mistake and not being pulled over the hot coals, because we want to make this industry better, right? So that's another element of conversation I want to have. I want to talk about the successes people are having as well. I want to talk about failures people are having. I want to talk about what was the biggest fuck up of your career. Like, the reality of it is, like, how did you get out of that, you know? And what was the biggest low point of you know, setting up your business? You know, what was, you know, ultimately, again, what was the biggest high point? But ultimately, we need to have the real conversations, because without having real conversations, this podcast isn't going to add real value. And this is what I want. I want people to get real value out of it, and don't want to be sitting on the fence and just asking a question and you know, putting that episode into the file and that's it. You know, good job. I want to be like, right, why? I want to be asking the really tough questions and pushing back and asking my guests to educate me and tell me the reasons why these things are happening and what we can do to improve it. And I'm going to ask them, what can I do? What can other people do? And let's really make a difference. So I'm really looking forward to this season. And there's going to be various different types of guests, from economists giving us their 10, 15 minutes on what's happening in the construction sector. I'm going to try and get economists from both Australia and New Zealand to really lay it out and give that information out there. I'm going to interview people who are unemployed. I'm going to find out, why are you unemployed? You know, like, what's the reason that you're so skilled that you've got all these qualifications and no one's giving you a chance? And then I'm going to interview those who have been there and done it and have got a 40, 50 year career, and they're probably sitting in a $5 million mansion. I want to know, like, I want us to really be the bird's eye view of construction. It's not just the glossy, you know, those on front of the Forbes magazine, those in front of, you know, on the Urban Developer who have managed to really, really kill it. You know, I want to find out about the bloggers, about the ones, as I said before, who are struggling to find work, the ones who have done amazing, the ones who have suffered massive, massive defeats and have bounced back. These are the conversations I want to have, and that's across construction, architecture, engineering, every sector that's involved in making the built environment a better place. So this is a little bit of a rambly introduction conversation today, but I'm really excited to get the podcast up and running again. There's going to be a new episode dropped every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock. So expect that, subscribe, tell your friends, we're here to stay. And I'm going to try my absolute best to make this a weekly episode. And you're going to hear from so many different types of people from the industry, from suppliers to business owners to candidates. And this is going to be, it's going to be so exciting. So, right, tell your people, tell your team, this is the place to be. This is the place to listen to the real conversations within construction. So without further ado, thank you for being a listener, and enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you so much for listening to Measured with me, Mick Donaghy. Our goal with this podcast is to create a community of construction professionals from a variety of backgrounds and experiences to develop, learn, and grow together. As a business, our aim with Franklin Smith is to become the most respected pre-construction and quantity surveying recruitment agency in Australia within the next 5 years. Thereafter, our goal is to build a 100-year company that outlives us as owners, but lives on in the careers and legacy projects we recruit for. Listening to this podcast is being a small part of that journey, and we are forever thankful for your time. If you'd like to connect further with our ever-growing community, check out the Measured Facebook and LinkedIn pages. Thanks for listening to Measured. Catch you next time.